Speaking with John Lennon, British Beatle, extraordinaire.
British Beatle, thank you.
Your tour here in Los Angeles is drawing to a close. I wonder if you have any particular comments to make about your visit to Los Angeles, John.
Well, it's been great and thrilling, you know, and we saw a couple of film stars, which we wanted to do, you know. And it's just great, and the bowl was marvelous.
What did you think about the audience and the way they... Most of the people, there were more than 17,000 persons in the Hollywood Bowl, and of course, not all of them teenagers, but for the most part, they were young adults and your fans. I wonder if you'd care to comment on the way they conducted themselves the night of your performance.
Well, it was so good. It was almost too well behaved, you know. They were very good, weren't they? I've never seen a crowd so big, so well behaved. Really, you know, somebody did a great job.
Have you had a chance to listen to America's commercial radio at all since you've been here in Los Angeles?
We do nothing else all day. We have a sort of transistor thing each, and we just listen, have them all on at various heights. On whichever record we like, we just turn that one up.
What exactly do you think of our commercial radio as opposed to the type of radio that you're accustomed to in England?
Well, it's great, but they've just started a couple in Britain now, pirate ships, they call them, off the British coast. Similar, only, you know, in sort of more modified British way. But you get good records all day, which you never got before. But I love it.
Of course, we have more commercials over here, probably just as much commercialization with advertising as we do with records. Do you feel there's an overabundance of commercials on our radio stations?
It does seem a lot when you just come out here. I suppose if you're used to it, it's at all, you know, it's nothing. Because when people come to Britain and see the advertising there on TV, they think it's awful. People that haven't got commercial TV, you know, so you just get used to it.
I understand you were the one that was responsible for the name of the group, the Beatles.
Yeah.
Could you tell us exactly how you decided upon that name?
Well, I remember the other day when somebody mentioned the Crickets. At a press conference, I'd forgotten all about that. I was looking for a name like the Crickets that meant two things. And from Crickets, I got to Beatles. And I changed the B-E-A because it didn't mean two things on its own. Without B-E-E-T-L-E-S didn't mean two things. So I changed the A, the E to the A, and it meant two things then.
What two things specifically? The beat,
well,
the music?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't have to mean two things, but it said, you know, it was beat and Beatles, and when you said it, people thought of Crawley things, and when you read it, it was beat music.
Why did you decide upon the long hair?
We didn't decide on it. The only reason I didn't have long hair at 13 was because I kept getting told to get it off. I've always liked it, and when I met George, Paul and Ringo, they've always liked it. We just bumped into each other. We didn't have it the same as this, but it was long, you know.
So actually, it wasn't something you decided to do when the group was formed. You all had long hair before the group.
Yeah, sometimes we'd have it short. You know, I've got photos of me with it longer than it is now, and shorter, much shorter. We used to just vary how we felt, you know.
How long has the group been a group, actually?
Well, I'm losing count now. I think it's about 5 years, probably. That's not including Ringo. He's been with us about three.
When you first, when your records first started coming over here, did you have any, did you wonder whether or not they would be successful as they were in England at the time?
We didn't think we stood a chance in Heath. We just didn't imagine it at all. We didn't even bother. We were just even when we came over to America the first time, we were only coming over to buy LPs. I know our manager had plans for Ed Sullivan shows, but we thought at least we'll hear the sounds when we get over there.
So it was just, you had no idea that your success would be so great and so powerful as it is today.
It was just out of the dark, you know. You know, that's the truth, it's so out of the dark. We were knocked out, like, we didn't know what happened.
Well, what made you decide to form a group such as you did? What was the reason for that?
Well, about the time of rock and roll in Britain, I think I was about 15, so it'd be 1955, there was a big thing called skiffle, which is a kind of folk music, American folk music, and he sort of jing 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 with washboards. Mm-hmm. And all the kids, you know, 15 onwards, used to have these groups, and I formed one at school. And then I met Paul, you know, I had this group, and then I met Paul, then I met George, and that's the way it went. We changed to rock, and that was all there was to it.
When did you cut your first record?
I have no clue. That must be about 1.5 years, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What was the reaction to it publicly in England?
It only sold in Liverpool. over the rest of Britain. They didn't, you know, nobody bought it there. About half a dozen people did. But it sold so many in Liverpool the first 2 days because they were all waiting for us to make it that the dealers down in London thought there's a fiddle on. That Mr. Epstein fella up there is cheated, you know. They didn't believe it. When they wrote in requests for it for the radio programmes, they wouldn't play it because they thought it was a cheat, because all the requests and everything came from Liverpool.
Now, here in the United States and in Los Angeles in particular, there are, well, the music lists on most of the radio stations that play Beatle music are predominantly Beatle records. Now, is this the same situation in England? Do they play several of your hits at one time, or do they just play one or two records, whereas we have maybe a half a dozen or more at one time on the charts?
No, they never do that because, well, not on the sort of BBC. The commercial radio doesn't either. They always give equal sort of spots to everybody. The only time you get more than one track usually is when they're playing LPs. They just play a new single, and when that's sort of going down, they'll turn it over and play the B-side.
Is there any one particular thing that you can lay your finger on that was the big break for you and your success today?
I have no clue. Yeah, probably just making the second record when it was number one.
Just your constant persistence and just keeping on with it.
I don't know. We didn't even think of it like that. We just thought we were making another record and it was better than the first one. Let's see what it does, you know. And when it was number one, we thought it was the end of the world. That was it.
I understand the crowds in England that turn out to see you are not quite on the large scale that they are here in the so many thousands like in Vancouver. You had something like more than 20,000 in a football stadium, and here in the Hollywood Bowl you had 17,000. How does this compare with the turnout in the British Isles?
Well, in Britain there's not half as many people, probably not a quarter. And when we play a British theatre, it only holds 2,000, the maximum, that's the largest. They're like the old music hall things that you don't even have over here. You know, the real old, these theatres were built years ago, or even cinemas we play. It's like playing to, going around all the cinemas. You know, there's nothing like 20,000 crowds. The only time you get that is for football.
How do you feel about the reaction of teenage America, young America, to your music, and the way they show their appreciation of the Beatle music by their screaming and their shrieking and their cheering?
Oh, well, we look.
Especially when you're performing, this is what I mean. You know, you can hardly. The predominant sound, of course, is the enthusiasm from the audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we played for about 4 or 5 years, being completely heard. You know, and it was good fun, and it's just as good fun to play being not heard and being more popular. You know, they pay the money. If they want to scream, scream. We scream. Literally, we're just screaming at their money with guitars. Everybody's screaming, there's no harm in it.
Getting back to the Hollywood Bowl, you know, I was the chap that drove the car out of the bowl for the other night. I wonder if you...
Best of luck to you.
It was kind of a short ride. The whole thing actually took less than 5 minutes. It really went off so beautifully, I was really surprised.
Well, that was because it was organised by our road manager, Neil, instead of 99 other people, including police officers, record company people, promoters, which is what normally happens, about 19 people...
Seems as though the element of surprise is the most important thing as far as getting you safely out of your performance area.
Yeah, you know, but we've just got fed up thinking about getting away. Somebody does that for us. You know, if they don't get us away, all right, we sleep the night somewhere. It's never happened, but, you know, there's no need worrying. It's not going to kill us, is it? Unless they get us, mind you.
Have you ever been physically mobbed and in a situation where that you actually feared for your safety and your personal welfare?
Now, once in New Zealand, it was a bit rough. I thought, definitely, big clump of my hair had gone. I don't mean just a bit. You know, I was halfway on the ground. I thought, hello. Must be just like a red, you know, when you get crushed. Because they put about 3 policemen on for 3,000 or 4,000 kids. And they refused to put any more on. We've had all sorts over here, you know. We've seen them all. And they had seen them all as we crushed to the ground. But apart from that, it was all right. Yeah, that was it.
I know that the success of the Beatles will probably continue for a long time, but what do you plan for the future? I realize this is your career right now, but do you have any particular specialization that you care to make, like writing for motion pictures or just continuing to write music, or what exactly?
I don't know. You know, I just get asked this all the time, every day, and I wish I could think of just a straight answer, like I want to be a man who walks with his left leg in the gutter. I can't. I wouldn't mind writing songs. I wouldn't mind just singing, you know, to a limited audience. see, my voice might improve when I get older. They do, you know. Or I wouldn't mind just writing books.
When did you write your first book?
Over a period of years, you know, most of it was written last year.
Do you plan another one in the very near future?
Yeah, I plan the more the merrier. If people like it as much as I do, I'll bring out millions, you know.
You just write because you enjoy it, not because you had any particular idea that the books would be popular or catch on, did you?
No, I was writing it before I was a Beatle. I was doing that stuff. Not exactly the same, but similar kind of stuff. You know, I always sort of fancied making a book. I didn't think anybody ever would. I thought, you know, if I showed it to anybody, they'd just say, go away, son, you know, go back to school. But they didn't. That's surprising, that.
What is your, specifically, is your educational background in England?
Junior school, grammar school, which I failed miserably, but great at art, folks. And so the headmaster recommended me to go to art school. He said, if he doesn't go there, he may as well just pack up life, pack up living, you see. So he arranged for me to go to art school, which I went to for 5 years and failed there too. I developed a great sense of humour and met some great people and had a laugh. And then I played rock and roll. Of course, I was playing rock and roll during all this time, grammar school and art school. Developing, like, the basic form of the music.
What exactly is the type of area that you were raised and brought up in Liverpool? Could you kind of give us a picture of what it's like over there as opposed to where you're sitting right now, for instance?
Well, you know, it's not all that different from this, because this is a bit of a dump, really. But most Americans think we came out sort of slums. I think Ringo came out of the lousiest area. You know, he doesn't care. He probably had more fun there. And I call them semi-detached. You know, that's sort of houses, half one house and half another house, you know, sort of upper middle class, you know. They don't exactly own the shops, but they, you know, they're one of those people, you know, the ones that don't think they speak with an accent, but they do. You know, those people say, how do you do? It's very nice to meet you, thank you very much. You know, and they think they're speaking Oxford English. But they're all right people, you know, you need them as well.
They kind of help make the world go round. Remember the other night at the airport, we were discussing Dave Hull.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, that was right, giving our addresses away to get popular. Find this one, Dave.
Dave is working. I think he's off by now. He gets off at midnight. He's going to be at the airport tomorrow morning. You're going to have a few words for him when you see him?
Yeah, I'll give him a few of the Rolling Stones addresses for a laugh.
Anything that you care to say in closing, John, about Los Angeles and about your visit here and about the tour so far here in America?
Good night and thanks for the bread.
Ringo, could I have a couple of words with you? I'd like you to tell me exactly what's exactly the matter with your throat. I understand.
Nothing.
In the
now,
news conference, you said that you were returning to University College.
Only because they want me to go in and have them out in case they start causing me any more trouble. It's just a safety precaution.
It is?
I have a couple of words with you.
Is there right?
Yeah, believe me.
What do you think of Paul McCartney?
Oh, I like him. He's quite nice, you know.
Yeah?
Once you get to know him.
Is it true that Pete Best was going to sue you at one time?
No.
It is not.
No, believe me, it's not.
It is not
honestly.
True? What about...
What can he sue me for?
Well, I didn't think he could either.
He can't. Well, he wasn't going. I haven't heard about it anyway.
I see.
You seem to hear more over here than we ever hear in England.
Well, so much of it is false.
Yeah.
What exactly are you planning on, when you plan on returning, do you know where you're going to stay yet, Ringo?
We're in England.
Just stay with
here.
Oh, no, I don't know.
How you doing, Dave?
I don't know when we get back now.
You don't know it yet?
No.
I see.
I never know.
I see. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm in the plane.
I want you to talk to you for just a second.
Please. Quick, Dave, quick.
Right. Can I get a couple of words from you concerning... could you step around in here?
Yeah, just go.
What about your stay here? Have you decided where you're going to stay? Is it going to be a home?
No, I'm not sure whether it's going to be here yet, you know, but... not really sure yet, no.
Is your father alarmed in any way about the amount of letters that have come from California that I'm responsible for?
No, he loves it. He said there were thousands.
Concerning Jane, are you engaged to her in any way?
Nothing, no.
Right.
She's my girlfriend, not engaged, not married, divorced, nothing, you know. But
what about, there's been rumored that you are residing at the Wimpole address with the Asher family.
There's so many rumors that have reached America, you know, about us, which are just completely untrue. That's another of them. She's just my girlfriend, you know, and I take her out when we're in London. That's all there is to it, really.
What about your next picture? Is there going to be a part made for Jane Asher in it?
No.
John, could you answer me a couple of questions about A Hard Day's Night? Did you Did you make up the title of A Hard Day's Night?
No, Ringo did.
People send him out.
Was it Ringo that made it up?
We can't go.
Yeah, he said it accidentally.
He did? What about In His Own Right? Which one of the stories is your favorite?
Act 1, Scene 3.
Act 1, Scene 3?
What about I like that?
Sad Michael or No Flies on Frank?
Well, they're earlier, you know, ones. I like the...
Do you consider yourself a little twisted?
No, not really.
Not really? Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with me. And
it's a pleasure. Buy the book, folks. It's not really twisted. It's good fun and happiness.
A couple of other things, too, concerning you and your wife. I asked you this once before when you were here last time. Is your wife expecting a child now?
No, she isn't. They keep writing about it in these damn fool magazines. Damn fool, I say. And I repeat it.
Yes.
Damn fool magazines. They keep writing stories about how she broke it to me and all that. I'm not having a baby. She's not having a baby.
There's a
baby.
That you are leaving the Beatles. Is that true?
That's another silly, you know. I don't know where to start. Oh, very funny, old Riggs. Goodbye.
Goodbye. George, I wonder if I could speak with you for just a moment. I'm Dave Hull.
Hello.
How are you?
Shake hands.
Thank you so much.
Yes,
I've had several conversations with your mother and father.
Yeah, I believe you have, yes.
Has your mother asked you any questions about the amount of letters that she's been receiving? She's been most kind, as you know, in answering them.
Well, I do know that now, as I don't often get back to Liverpool. In fact, it's the same with most of us. And the times we do get back to Liverpool, we spend just seeing our families.
You do get a chance to see your mother and father?
Yeah, occasionally. Oh, yes. And if I can't go up there, they come down to see me wherever I am.
Oh, they do get a chance to see you then.
But my parents have been very good in answering letters.
The best. They
and
really
I know she said, my mother said that she's had a lot of letters. In fact, more letters from California around this area than any other place.
I'm responsible for that, and I hope she's not upset in any way.
No, but, you know, she enjoys it, she likes it, and she likes all the kids who write to her, and, you know, she appreciates it.
A lot of kids have asked me about Patty Boyd, George. Are you engaged?
No, not engaged, not married, and no plans of marriage.
Paul, how are you?
How you doing, Dave?
Fine. Hey. Paul, I'd like to ask you a question about... I understood.
What's that, Dave? Hey, listen, I've only just found out about you. You're the fellow who's giving away all the addresses.
Yes, I am.
I thought you were a nice bloke. I'm not speaking to you for that. Go away.
Listen,
whose
fishing poles were stuck out the window in Seattle?
Yeah,
whose fishing poles were stuck out the window in Seattle? There were two fishing
George
poles.
George and Ringo's.
Were they? Did they catch anything?
Are you really the fellow who's giving away the addresses?
Yes,
have you
I
heard
am.
About this man?
Yes.
What about this man?
He gives away all the home addresses of everyone.
Really?
What do you think of
I'm
a man
I'm a rotten
like that?
Guy, aren't I?
Listen, yes.
Oh, no, I'm not really.
It's not a nice trick, Dave.
What is your favorite part in A Hard Day's Night?
A bit in the field.
Oh, mine too, but what about the bathtub?
Oh, yeah, I don't mind that, but I prefer the bit in the field.
Was it true that some of the stuff was spontaneous, John?
All the bit in the bathtub was. The idea wasn't. They just run it, and I just had to do whatever I thought of in the background.
What about the other fellows? Did they do things, too, that were spontaneous?
There's quite a lot of it spontaneous, only you can't really, because you've got to do so many takes, even if, say, the four of us are there, and one of us thinks of a gag ad-lib, you throw it in, and then, but something in the background was wrong, so you've got to do it again, so they're not ad-lib at the end. We stuck quite a lot to the script, you know, some of the gags were us, or the director, you know, he threw quite a bit into.
John, may I ask you, it's been rumored that the next film that you are... preparing to write now. Have you started writing the next film?
No, I'm not writing it at all. You know, it was just an idea. That started because I had a book, a short story at home, which I thought would make a good film if it was rewritten. And that's how it got round that I was going to write it, you know, but I haven't got time. I don't even think I could anyway.
Well, it's been rumored that it's going to be filmed in Hollywood. Can you tell us whether it is or it isn't?
No, it's definitely not being filmed in Hollywood. It'll be done in England. It's cheaper. And, you know, it saves us going away from home as well.
John, tell me if you've yet moved into your home in Surrey.
No, I haven't had time. The place is empty. You know, there's no furniture. It needs decorating and walls knocking down and things. It's nowhere near ready. I'll be in next year, probably.
You will be?
Well, I hope before. It depends. That's the longest it'll take, you know, to fix it up.
And, John, they said that you had moved to Empress Gate. Are you moving out of there and into the Surrey home? Is that it?
I've moved from Empress Gate, but not into the house, you see.
I see. Okay, thank you so much.
Yes, sneaking on the planes, eh?
Shh, don't say that.
They caught you, though, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Did you think of the title of A Hard Day's Night?
Yes.
How did you do it?
I don't know. It just came out. We went to do a job, you know, and we worked all day, and we happened to work all night, and I came out still thinking it was day, I suppose, and said, it's been a hard day. Looked around, it was dark, and said, night. So we came to a hard day's night.
What about your throat? I understand you're going back into the hospital this fall for a throat operation. Would you tell us about it?
I'm just going to get them out. You know, my tonsils, there's nothing the matter with them now. They've cured them, but they're all they're worried about is if they can go again, you see.
Some magazines have said no.
It's finished, you see.
What about your father's horse?
What
Drake's
about
Drum.
It? Yes?
Drake's Drum. Are you planning on entering Drake's Drum in races in the U.S.?
Well, I see. It's nothing to do with it, you know, because it's my dad's horse, and I didn't buy it for myself. I bought it as a birthday present for him, so if he fancies entering it, you know, let him. Good on him. He's doing okay, though. Won last time out.
I know. And he came in second on the first time out?
Yeah.
Well, then you've had two places in two starts.
Yes, very good it was.
Then you're in no way connected with Drake's Drum at all?
Well, I mean, I bought it for my dad, but I'm not, it's not mine or anything, you know.
All right.
I have a bet on it.
Do you really?
Yeah, sure.
Beautiful. What about your favorite part in A Hard Day's Night? Which one was it? Can you recall?
Favorite bit of it? The field, definitely.
The field?
Yes.
Very good. That's my favorite, too. What about any of the other parts? Can you think of the...
Ringo's bit was Ringo. The bit I liked as well. You know, I like the field best. And then all Ringo stuff, and you know, with them playing Ringo's theme over it, This Boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, why did they choose This Boy to be Ringo's theme? Was it his favorite, Paul?
Well, I think he likes it, you know, as a song. But it was just it fitted in, you know. That was the main point, really.
Ringo.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
It's me again.
It's you again. I know. Hey,
yes.
You again. What now? What?
I wanted to ask you one question, a personal question about Maureen.
Maureen.
Yes.
Maureen who?
Cox.
Oh, yes.
She is performing duties as your private secretary, as she understands.
No.
She's not.
It's a load of rubbish, really, you see. We had an interview together, and because she's given her job up, you see, the reporter said, well, what are you going to do? And I sort of said, well, she must probably end up working for me. And then so there was this headline, you know, Ringo's new secretary, but she hasn't done anything yet. I haven't seen her for quite a while, actually, you know.
Oh, is that correct?
Yeah. She said, we're not going sort of steady or anything, you know. It just happened that I met her, and I thought, well, would you like to come away, you know, because it's no fun if we go on our own. We can't just sort of go out and, you know, with girls and that. We can't sort of go to dances or clubs or that, you know. And we went away, and we were chaperoned anyway, because the captain of the boat and his wife were on board, so we, you know, all the magazines in America say, you know, sort of unchaperoned, ho, ho, ho. But we were chaperoned, you know. It was nothing sort of...
Are you looking forward to seeing any particular part of Los Angeles or Hollywood while you're here? I mean, other than the fact that it's been rumored that you're planning on or wish to see Disneyland, have you thought about anything?
No, we didn't plan it all. I don't think we even wish it, you know. I mean, I never thought of going to Disneyland. We may go there, but I've never, you know, thought or said, well, let's go to Disneyland. I didn't even know it was here, actually. But, we go to the places and then you never know what happens, you know. May go to a club or something like that, but we've nothing planned.
How would you find the audience in Canada compared to the American audiences? Are they somewhat the same?
The same. The same most of the world over. It's only Paris where they're different when you get your more fellas than girls, you know.
That's in Paris?
In Paris, yeah.
What, do they have the same acceptance, though, even though the crowd is different?
Yeah, but instead of a scream, you get a roar. You know, instead of, you get, roar.
George, there's a couple of questions I'd like to ask you. Are the Beatles planning on visiting Disneyland?
Disneyland?
Yes.
Well, I don't think so. You see, if we did suddenly think, let's go and see Disneyland, we'd make quick arrangements and go there without letting anybody know, because if we said now, yeah, we'll be going there on Monday, then there'd be thousands of people there and we wouldn't see it anyway. But as far as we know, you know, we haven't made any plans to see it.
I see. What part in the movie did you like the best, A Hard Day's Night?
I like the bit in the field.
Yes, that, very good.
On the screen, I like watching that bit. I think that bit's the best.
Yes.
But I don't know about making the film. I don't know. I think I enjoyed the scene in the bathroom.
With the John in the
top.
Yeah,
that's making it, but just as of in the film, I prefer the bit in the field.
I see. But I do want you to please convey my best wishes to your mother and father.
Okay.
Please do that.
I will.
Thank you.
Miguel, before you leave.
Aren't you coming with us?
No.
Oh, why?
I wanted you to say goodbye to the hundreds of thousands of people here in Los Angeles.
Well, goodbye, and we've had a great time. It's been fab being here.
Okay.
Great place you got here. Hope to come back.